This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We'll be giving a pair of tickets away to the Michigan State Boise State basketball game coming up tomorrow night. So give us a call at 884-0730. I think that's the number of they've changed our number somewhat, but I know it's 884 was the old one, 4870. That hasn't been working, so I think that's the one that's working now. But we'll check that out and tell you more about that. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. We're going to talk the new Big Ten with expansion on the minds of everyone and release of people at the Big Ten. Looks like Maryland's going to be coming into the Big Ten and also Rutgers. So let's talk with our good friend Graham Couch, the columnist for the Lansing State Journal, about the Big Ten and expansion. Hey, Graham, how you doing?
I'm well, Earl. How about yourself?
Hey, pretty good. And it was a little surprise over the weekend when we heard about that Maryland and Rutgers is going to be joining the Big Ten. It looks like they're really trying to expand the Big Ten network. You think it's really about just the Big Ten network, or is there anything else behind it?
Well, yeah, it's also about the ESPN TV deal, but it's all TV. There's no question, or at least most of it's television. In 2017, the first-tier TV rights, the billion-dollar contract with ESPN expires, and to have the Washington, D.C. and New York television markets in play for those negotiations makes sense for the Big Ten. And, this is all money, and it's television money, and nobody brings in more of that than the Big Ten, and the Big Ten Network's obviously a big part of that. If you can have that on, every cable system in those major cities, that adds to it. It's about the brand, and I think there might be a small part of it. The Big Ten is showing its teeth a little bit. I don't think it appreciated last summer being pushed around, or feeling like it was pushed around in terms of a lot of the rhetoric coming from the SEC and Notre Dame, who they've probably coveted for years, aligning with the ACC and all that stuff. So I think there's probably a bit of puffing their chest out right now, but that's not the primary reason behind this.
Yes, because that's surprising. I mean, I even heard the other day a few people came up and asked me about Notre Dame, and I just had to tell them politely that Notre Dame's turned down the Big Ten offers and trying to get in the Big Ten for years. And I said that's not going to change. But it's still, people want to think that Notre Dame, it's a good fit and everything because they're right here in the middle of the country, in the middle of the Midwest. People think it's a good fit, and I know the Big Ten thinks it's a good fit, but apparently Notre Dame wants to keep all that money to themselves, which is what the ACC is letting them do.
Well, and that's the thing. It's not as much about geography, although New Jersey and Maryland technically do border Big Ten states, but it's about television markets and what you bring in. And Notre Dame may be in South Bend, Indiana, but we all know their market is not just the Midwest and Chicago. It's a real national reach. That puts you in a lot of homes, and that's why they're attractive. So the Big Ten is probably going to go to 16 at some point, and where they go from here will be very interesting. Do they leapfrog other states to go out west, to go down south? Do they go after a school like Texas, who they'd love to have, and try and do some deal with the Longhorn Network? Now, there's a school you'd have to give a piece of the money to. I mean, ideally, if the Big Ten had its druthers for the next two teams, it would somehow get Notre Dame and Texas, and that's not going to happen. But if you had those two schools, you'd really have to – the way you distributed the television money would probably aggravate a lot of people, but you'd have just an enormous market share in this country.
That's true. Well, let's go to the phone. We've got a caller on the line already. Todd, how you doing?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I appreciate your guest there saying this was all about money, and that's what it is. And we can all, I guess, if you're a moralist or somebody that actually doesn't live your life by the amount of green or white or money you can put in your pocket, I guess the days are gone, and maybe you're a sucker. But I want to thank the Big Ten presidents, Jim Delaney, and whoever made this. Thank you. because now we get to watch Minnesota versus Maryland women's softball games. And I'm not against women's softball, but what I mean, these people are given positions of power to make decisions that I'm saying are not easy. But should they be totally motivated by the amount of money that they put in their pocket? This doesn't help the student athletes. This doesn't help the alumni. This doesn't help anybody except for these elected or chosen figureheads that now get to go around and brag about a television market. I got to watch Michigan State already. What do I get? I mean, I guess I only went to school there. I guess I only graduated from there. I guess I only pay to go see their events at which they charge me more and more every year. What do I get out of it? Are they going to reduce the cost of the basketball tickets? We know the answer to that. Are they going to reduce the cost of going to a hockey game? We know the answer for this. So, I mean, again, if you're going to make a decision, you don't simply make a decision at what's best for you. Don't you make a decision, hopefully, on what's best for the people that you represent? Don't you make a decision on what you know is best for a university? And again, we know why they did it, but that doesn't make it right. How interested is anybody from Iowa going to be to take a road trip to New Jersey? Now, if you have family there, and I'm not bad-mouthing New Jersey, I'm sure it's a fine place to live, but this was done simply for a television market, which means absolutely nothing to anyone who's been a part of or seen Big Ten football, basketball, or whatever sport it is you choose to root for or fight. And it does nothing for us, and we continue to let it happen. Why?
Here's where I'll agree with you and disagree with you. You know, and I do think from, you know, just a perspective of sort of college sports purity and what Big Ten fans care about, and the league seems to be stable as it is. It's a question of why. Why is this necessary? And it does appear to be about greed and all that. But I also think there is a level of fear. And, you know, they see everything shifting, and it's about being the stable league. It's about being the league when everything's done shaking out that's still standing. And here's how it helps potentially. And I'm not disagreeing with you on this, but I'm just playing a little devil's advocate and what the Big Ten would probably say. How it helps the fan in Iowa and East Lansing and places like that is the Big Ten being on stable ground. And this is part of what to financially be on stable ground moving forward, to be a major player and have its teams in the part of the, you know, the Final Four playoffs, and to be a player nationally, you need to keep making sure you're lucrative and making sure you're getting that market share and making sure you're relevant. And this helps them do that, which ultimately helps the rest of the league. It's one of those, what's good for the league is good for its members deals. I would argue the other side, though, is I think the league would have been fine at 12. I think when you look at where the teams are and what they have right now, when you look at the brands at places like Ohio State and Michigan and just how strong are research institutions that are in this league, I mean, it's safe. It really is. But obviously the Big Ten saw an opportunity to make more money and probably throw a little dig at some other leagues and show their teeth, and also for what they thought was you know, make them more stable. It may make sense down the road, and this isn't the end of the move. There's no way they sit still at 14, so be very curious to see where they go.
Again, but any business should take at least into some account. And again, we're all grown-ups here. We're all adults. And to some respect, the opinion, value, and ability of their customers to either appreciate or want to consume their product. And again, so they're going to make more money for TV markets so that they can pay their coaches more, so that they can build new facilities.
Well, that's all part of it.
Okay, but that doesn't make it right. Just because it's real doesn't make it right. They've done all this so that they can charge me more money to go and do something that I could do before anyways, couldn't I?
Yeah, you could, but you still can, because
except it cost me a lot more money.
Not necessarily. You're assuming it's going to cost more money, but it's not.
Okay, let me ask you: when's the last time the price of football tickets went down? Basketball tickets went down?
It's been a while, but it's right now it's stable. So it may go up in the next couple of years. It may just stay stable for 4 or 5 years.
Do you think they're going to lower it? With all this new money they've got, they're going to lower them and then give me back some of the money that I've already paid them, right?
That's not going to happen.
You know that.
Exactly, it's not going to happen. Of course it's not going to happen. And that doesn't mean that it's right.
Yeah, but that's the way of the world, as you know.
Well, again, I mean, like I said, if you want to sit here, then let's just acknowledge what this truly is. It has nothing to do with the fans. It has nothing to do with the students that participate in the games. It has everything to do with these universities not paying, again, a great education in Michigan State on the universities, not giving them anything but finding every nickel and dime that they can take from either you, me, or anybody else, and then saying, well, we had to do it. No, you didn't have to. You chose to do it, and there's a difference.
Well, we've heard that. I mean, and Graham, we've heard a lot of that from the university. I know I have before that, you know, they're always looking to expand revenues. They're looking for new sources of revenue. And, of course, adding two more teams, that's going to be a couple of some more new sources of revenue. And that's what college is headed for, because as we've seen already in the Big Ten, all the expansion that's been going on and all the development, all the grounds that have been help to add more teams, but that's the way of the world, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it also, you know, for schools like MSU, if the Big Ten, you know, is able to give it more share of television money, this is important. And I should have brought this up with the previous caller, because, you know, Michigan State does not live that far above. I mean, Michigan State does not have to have the school subsidize its athletic programs, but it doesn't live, you know, way in the black like Ohio State does, where it's giving money back to the university and things of that nature. It's paying its coaches a fair salary, but and in terms of the market value, but not anywhere near the top of the market. And so if there's more money coming in, it does help Michigan State. Now, it does look like in bad form when you get a new team, which is supposed to bring new money, and you've had a losing season if you do raise ticket prices, and I suspect they won't next year. There are ways it does help. If there's more money coming into Michigan State athletics, ultimately that should help Michigan State.
Yes, because that's what's going to happen. They're trying to get more money for all the schools, for the 12 that are in here now, to be expanded for more. And yes, I mean, we know it's not going to help, of course, but every team is looking to expand and bring in more money as they can. And Big Ten and Michigan State is no different from any of the other teams in the Big Ten. They always want more revenues, and the way to pay more bills or pay the bills more adequately, because Michigan State, like all the other Big Ten institutions, have expanded their facilities and they are growing. And part of that is because of the Big Ten Network. The Big Ten Network has been a boon for the Big Ten.
No doubt. And you know, that was when it first came out, and there were a lot of fights with cable systems and everything. It didn't know whether it would take, and the Big Ten stuck to it. And you know, you got to say this for the Big Ten: most of the moves they've made recently have worked out. I'm not sure the decision with hockey is best for that sport, but that's a different matter. But most of the moves they made, and so at some point you got to kind of trust the hand a little bit. I do understand the frustration though, because you know, there's a level of tradition, and over time fans come to accept Penn State as one of theirs, and then they come to accept Nebraska
is
part of it, and it works, and it's kind of cool, and it's one team kind of at a time, and then all of a sudden it's boom, 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 and the league feels different. And part of what makes the Big Ten great is that tradition and that sense of this is who the Big Ten is. When you're probably going to have five new teams in the course of 4 or 5 years here when this is all said and done, the league will look very different.
Okay. Hey, Graham, it's been very good talking to you. I may have to have you back on again real soon, because, as you know, we got one caller on the line. We'll have to let him go, but we got to make way for another guest. And, hey, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And as we know, Big Ten is expanding. Of course, they won't be having Notre Dame in there. That's the team everyone wanted, but Notre Dame isn't coming to the Big Ten, are they?
No, not coming anytime soon. Earl, I always enjoy it.
Okay, we'll have you on again, Graham. Okay, thanks a lot. Yeah, bye-bye. And that's Graham Couch from the Lansing State Journal. The time, 20 minutes after the hour, 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Where do you go for great conversation on the topics that matter the most? The radio is more responsive than the water cooler, and we take your calls. I'm Jennifer Ludden. If you're talking about it, we're probably talking about it too. Join us for provocative talk on the issues you care about. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Our high today, 56 degrees and partly sunny. Tonight will be mostly cloudy and our low will be 40 degrees. Tuesday, cloudy and a chance of rain, the high tomorrow 55. Sunny and a high of 56 on Wednesday. This is Scott Pohl.
And if you want a chance to win tickets to tomorrow night's basketball game between Michigan State and Boise State, give us a call at 884-4783. That's 884-4783 or call 884-4870. And they are working, so give us a call at either one of those numbers and you can have a chance to win tickets to tomorrow night's game to Michigan State and Boise State. Well, right now, we got to talk with a good friend of ours who we're a little disappointed that, unfortunately, well, he's more disappointed than we are. Seth Mitchell, he lost on Saturday night to Jonathan Banks, the Detroit Fighter. He was knocked out in the second round, but let's bring in Seth Mitchell. Seth, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, considering, you know, mentally I'm fine. My health is fine. I just, you know, definitely I have a little a heavy heart, but other than that, everything is good. You know, I'll bounce back. I'll bounce back from it. I got to, you know, just go back to the drawing board and see what happens. But mentally and physically, I'm good, and that's most important in my book.
Yeah, see, he caught you. I know he caught you with the right hand. That first, it seemed like you never really, well, he did what he should do, just stayed on top of you. You know, you didn't get a chance to recover from that first knockdown, did you?
Right, yeah, you know, give all the credit to Jonathan. He, you know, really wasn't. I believe Chaz Witherspoon hit me harder. He caught me in the temple and threw my equilibrium off a little bit. But he did what he was supposed to, and you know, and letting his hands go and following up. And you know, I just couldn't recover. I mean, I didn't want the ref to stop the fight. But kudos to the referee for, you know, doing the job. Anytime you get knocked down three times in one round, most likely the ref is going to stop the fight.
Yeah.
So I can't argue with him, and I just got to get better.
Yes. I think you said after the fight, you know, he's a counter puncher, and I know he caught you right. You know, you had jabbed, and then he caught you with the jab. Was it simply a matter of him being a good counter puncher?
I mean, we knew going into – first of all, I'd like to thank my trainer, Andre Hunter, who put together a marvelous game plan. I knew everything that he was going to do before I got into the ring, and one of the things that I shouldn't do, and that was, you know, not reach, not lunge in, and not just, you know, get off balance. And the success that I had in the first round and his body language, I felt, you know, that was going to happen after about four or five rounds. And after the first round, I was like, okay, this pressure's really getting to him. So I got a little, you know, overzealous in the second round, and, you know, I paid for it. And it's a learning. It's going to be a learning experience for me. But I just got to get better. And, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't disappointed and I wasn't hurt. You know, sometimes as I'm riding around, I still think, man, did that just happen? But it's a part of the game. I'm a strong individual, and it'll do nothing but but make me stronger.
Yes, because when you get back in the ring, you go back. You know, of course, the talk before then, you know, you'd face a Klitschko in the end of next year. As you know, the way boxing is, you know, you could end up fighting a Klitschko next year. I mean, as strange as that may sound, that may help you in a way, even make it easier to get a fight with one of the Klitschko brothers.
You know, we'll see. I mean, I know it definitely this loss. You know, one thing about boxing is unforgiving, and, you know, it definitely set me back, you know, a few fights, you know, 6 to 8 months. So we just got to see where it takes me. But one thing that I'm not, I want all of my fans, all of my loved ones and my followers to know that I'm not discouraged at all. Disappointed, yes, but it's definitely going to make me a stronger fighter, a stronger individual. I've bounced back from adversity before, and that's my intent. That's my plan this time. And I'm excited. I'm actually ready to get back into the gym now, but I know I need to take a little bit of time off with the family and just, you know, forget about boxing for a little bit. But I'm definitely motivated, man, and still excited about the future. It's a learning experience, and I'll get better. I know what I did wrong, and we just got to work on it.
Okay, now what did you do wrong, and what do you think you have to do to get better? What do you need to work on now?
With this, you know, I reached, and like I said, in the second round, I knew that I couldn't reach with him. And with this, I threw my looping right hand from too far out, and it left me off balance. And he countered with a good shot to the temple, which initially started, you know, it started the trouble, and he just finished me off. But and when I'm throwing punches, and I'm pretty fast, and I got power in both my hands, but I get a little neglect my defense when I'm in the line of fighter. When I'm in the line of fighter, when I'm, you know, throwing combinations. So when I'm throwing combinations, I got to bring my hands back to my head. And I think as my makeup, I'm an aggressive. You saw me play football.
Yeah.
I'm an aggressive individual. When it comes to competing, I'm very aggressive. And you know, sometimes, you know, I need to take it a little bit slower, especially, you know, with heavyweights. You know, like you said, it only takes one shot and the fight can be over, and that's what happened. That's what happened Saturday night. So just slow down a little bit more. But it's a lot of things that I need to do, but I'm willing to work on them.
Okay, well, that's good, because that, as we know, the fight game is a tough game, and yes, you always learn from every win you learn, and from every, you know, every time you lose, you learn. So you definitely have to take that as a learning experience. And of course, now you'll be getting back in the ring whenever you get back in the ring, you know, to train for another fight. So you're gonna have to work more on your countering, or work more on your defense, basically.
We're gonna start back from scratch. Work more on everything, but definitely work more on my defense. Is going to be one of the main priorities, and not lunging as much, and not opening myself up and judging my space better. You know, in some fights I've done a better job at it, but it's not innate to me right now. You know, I'm still learning. So those are some of the things that I got to work and applying. I like to apply pressure. But you can apply pressure without throwing punches, just to make your presence known. Working on things such as that to make me a more complete fighter.
Yes, and Jonathan, as we know, you are weighing by almost 20 pounds?
I believe 22 pounds.
So
24 pounds, I believe.
Yeah, so the weight must not have made much difference to you, or to you in that fight.
Oh, I mean, no. I mean, anytime you have somebody. Hell, if you get caught right, no matter how much somebody weighs, you can go to sleep. But I fought, I mean, he was 218. Yeah. I fought people that was 202 before. So, you know, the weight didn't really make a difference. He was prepared. And we knew that the most disappointing thing about the whole situation is we knew his main thing was counterpunching, and for me not to reach and not to lunge. And in the second round, that's what I did. That's when he caught me, and that's when he finished me off. So that's the most disappointing, you know, thing, to go out there to execute in the first round and then come back and do what we've been training 7 weeks not to do. That's the most disappointing thing. But what you're going to do is it's spilled milk now. You just got to clean it up, you know what I mean, and try to get better.
Yes, that's for sure. And that's, you know, that – you know, a lot of people were like, even I was surprised that you had lost. Like a lot of people here, of course, who've been following you over your career. You know, we know you're disappointed, but we also know you're a Spartan and you'll bounce back. That's what Spartans do. So, you know, it's been a very disappointing football season for the Spartans as far as football goes. So it wasn't a good night for the Spartans, was it?
Wasn't a good night at all, but like you said before that comment, we'll bounce back. We'll bounce back. I actually talked to Coach Manning today, and I told him to tell the team, you know, we get knocked down, but we're gonna get back up, man.
Without a doubt, and that's the thing. You know, when you fight a good fighter like that, he's a good fighter. You know, and a good counter puncher, and all those kind of things. But you learn something. Each fight, you learn something that maybe you just didn't have to execute before. Now, what was the biggest thing you learned from that fight?
One of the biggest things I learned is, you know, we had a game plan going into the fight and going to the first round. You know, you kind of, you know, repeat to yourself, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do. Don't do this and don't do that. But the success that I had in the first round, going into the second round, I kind of forgot about the things that I did in the first round because of the success I had in the first round.
Yeah.
And I didn't say to myself, well, I'm about to go out here and finish him in the second round. But I did notice after the first round that he's just my pressure, my jab, you know what I'm saying? I really affected him. You know, he ain't gonna last, you know, this whole round. So kinda, you know, just threw me off a little bit, and that's experience right there. Like, next time, you know, when that happened, I'll know going into the second round, okay, still stick to your game plan. What are the things that got you here? Don't reach, you know, make sure you double jab, make sure you bring your head back, cut them off, don't throw, you know, don't lunge in. So those are some of the things that I've learned from this fight.
Well, that's always good. That's one thing, as you know, you definitely want to learn from every fight, win or lose. You want to learn to take something away with you, and you know, put it in your hat. That is, and something you're going to do for the next fight. So it's good that it ended up being. You have to look at everything. Every fight you have to look at as a learning experience, don't you?
Yes, sir. You have to. I think that's the only way that you can get better and improve. As an individual, as a person, and as an athlete, so that's what I'm trying to do, trying to take it in stride. You know, I'll be lying if I said it didn't hurt or it doesn't matter. It matters, and but I got to move on, and you know, good times are coming, man. I'm still very excited.
Yes, I mean, you're 25-1-1 now with 19 KOs. Still a very good record. And, of course, you know, and Banks is now 29-1-1 with 19 KOs as well. So he's got a good record. Did you talk at all with him about what's his next plans? I know I hear he might fight a Klitschko. I guess that's one of the rumors.
I'm not sure. I mean, I know. You know, like I said, he had nothing but good things to say about me, vice versa. You know, I told him, you know, we fought for the belt. I really wanted the belt, and he got it. I wished him, you know, the best in his career. You know, I have no ill thoughts or nothing bad to say about him. He did what he was supposed to do, and I'm pretty sure with that win, I don't know if he'll get a title shot next, but it definitely he definitely got himself another big fight.
Yes. Now, that's one thing about boxing. I know that I don't like it. And you two seem like, you know, you know, they try to promote it. Most fights is that you don't like the guy and you got to take the guy out or knock him out. And that was, you know, I know you wanted to win the fight, but it wasn't any hate or animosity, was it, between you two of you?
No hate or animosity at all. I mean, and with me, I don't really, you know, I don't really talk trash. I'm a humble guy, you know, by nature. But, you know, I don't talk trash. He didn't talk trash. Even if somebody, you know what I'm saying, was real negative or whatever, that's just not my style. I just try to go into the ring and perform. And I just came up short. I came up short Saturday night. You know, what can I say? The only thing I could is look at it and get better. But Jonathan Banks, he's a good dude, good fighter. Like I told him at the press conference, I wish him nothing but success.
And of course, he was trained by Emmanuel Stewart, so we knew that was an emotional fight for him, fighting for the first fight after Emmanuel. And of course, that probably had something to do with his chances, because he really wanted to win one for Emmanuel. And you know, you can't always do that, but you know that probably helped him a lot, didn't it? That he had the wherewithal to win a fight for Emmanuel Stewart.
I'm not gonna say it did. I'm not gonna say it didn't, because if he had lost, it would have been like he had, you know, too much stuff on his mind. He had a heavy heart, so he trained hard for the fight. He knew what he was getting himself into when the contract was signed. When he had to fight myself, and he trained hard and he came out and he did what he was supposed to do. So you know, I'm not gonna say I'm glad that he got the victory, but I wish him continued success. But for me to say, you know, he did it for Emmanuel Stewart, you know, it could have been, if I'd have stopped him in the second round, it would have been he had a heavy heart. He had too much on his plate. He was training too much. So I don't look at it like that, really.
Okay. Hey, Before I let you go, you've had a lot of successes. We've been following you, as you know, since you started fighting, and I want to wish you the best of luck as you continue on. And any chance or anybody, or your manager or anything, say what's next?
We haven't talked about it yet, but I know I'll probably be back in the ring in February or March. Take a little bit of time off and be back February or March.
Okay, well, so that'll be good to bounce back in the ring, and you've got to do more training as far as just countering and so you don't make the mistakes, and since you know that pretty good, so will you have to do something specifically as far as physically, or you just have to just remember all the things that you did and put that in the back of your mind so you don't do those things again?
Practice makes you better, so we just gotta. Different techniques, different things of that nature to just try to, make it become second nature.
Okay, yeah. So once it becomes second nature, that's a lot. And since you're still learning the fight game, you've got to still get a lot of things you need to do to make that second nature, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I'm up for the cause, though.
Okay. Hey, well, Seth, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And, hey, hope best of luck to you in the next fight. I know you're going to get back on track. And, it's not really a big setback. Yes, it's a setback, but it's not really a big setback when you lose it. A lot of times you lose, you gain more when you lose a fight than if you win one.
Absolutely. And that's how I'm looking at it. Like I said, it's probably about a 6 or 7 month setback. But I just got to get back to the drawing board. And the most important thing is to go out there in my next fight and do better. And that's what I plan on doing 100%.
Okay. Hey, Seth, thanks for talking with me, a friend. And I'll be calling you again, and we'll talk more, of course, in the next few months.
Thank you very much, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, bye-bye. And that's Seth Mitchell talking after he lost his first fight Saturday night. He is now 25-1-1 with 19 KOs. Jonathan Banks, though, he went up to 29-1-1 with 19 KOs. So Seth is still he's still on the drawing board. He'll have a chance to move up and fight some very good fights coming up. And, Aaron, we'll talk about his upcoming fights when he gets in the ring. And very disappointing to watching him lose the fight. I know I was. And like he says, he'll be back in the ring and he'll be fighting. And when you lose one fight, a lot of times that does help you to get better for your next fight. And so, yeah, so I expect he'll be better the next time out.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a good record. Nothing to put his chin down or anything. So I mean, he still has a great record, and I'm not a boxing historian, but I would argue I'm sure there's some boxers out there, some of the best ones, I'm sure, didn't have exactly perfect records. So everyone's probably going to lose here and there, and obviously this is his first loss, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's he's going to learn a lot from it, and it's only going to make him stronger. He's got the right attitude, obviously. He's got the perfect attitude towards it, and I expect him to work hard towards his next fight and hopefully come out with a W on the next one.
Oh, that's for sure. Well, we got some news in. John Gagliardi, the winningest coach in college football's East Division III coach. He's the winningest coach in football. He's from the University, St. John's University in Minnesota. Gagliardi has won over 300. Well, actually, he's won over a lot more games. And he retires with Eddie Robinson. Was second to him in career record, 489, 138, 11. He surpassed Eddie Robinson for his career coaching record, career victories in 2003. So John Gagliardi is going to retire, and he won 4 national championships at Division III. So congratulations to John. The time now, 40 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
When parents fall ill, are deployed, or overwhelmed, kids are sometimes left to fend for themselves. If there are no friends or family members to help out, older kids must not only deal with the loss of their parents, but also step into their shoes. I'm Jennifer Ludden, Siblings Raising Siblings. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
I'm Scott Pohl with a look at the weather forecast. Today will be partly sunny, and we're expecting a high of 56 degrees. Mostly cloudy and a low of 40 tonight. Cloudy on Tuesday with a chance of showers, the high tomorrow 55. Sunny and 56 for a high Wednesday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. Well, we're going to play a few cuts for you. We had a chance to talk with Susie Merchant over the weekend, also a couple of the men's players and also Coach Izzo, and we'll talk with them coming up here on AM 870. Well, we talked with Coach Merchant after her win over the weekend, and he talked about how she's getting her players ready to come to play.
But we do want to run. You know, the nice thing is the kids, like our guard play, for example, if you look at Jasmine, Annalise, and Clarissa, those three kids just in particular, those kids have very high motors, you know, in terms of their output. Like, they're not kids that really hit walls like other kids that I've coached. You know, it's kind of like Brittany Thomas could go. You know, like Satara Washington, she'd hit a wall, you'd have to get her out. You know, she needed her rest time. But the thing about those three is that they're in very, very good shape. And, you know, they're high-engine kids, you know. So I think we can ride them for that amount of time. I did try to get them out a little more. I mean, JT got 5 minutes throughout the game, and we had KB with 7 minutes. So, but to be honest, those are the three kids. And if we're open in transition, that's where they're best. You know, they can get up and down the floor.
And then Coach Merchant talked about their offensive attacks.
We really want to score in the paint. We actually chart our paint touches. So even if we're kind of in that spread offense, we're trying to get a piece of the paint somehow to create offense a little bit through inside-out attack. And it might be through our post. It might be through a drive and a kick. But it is important to us. I don't think we're a great jump shooting team, you know, just kind of jab at you and shoot it. I think we do a nice job of sharing the ball, that's for sure. But, you know, that could eventually come back to haunt you too. You know, you want that team approach at the same time. You know, who's your go-to player? You know, you gotta be able to have that a little bit too. But I like the fight in them.
And yes, and we're going to go next to Tom Izzo and hear what he has to say about his game over the weekend as they beat Texas Southern over the weekend. We also got to let you know about some of the other. We'll have a few cuts for you from Izzo. Then we'll also hear from Derek Nix and also from Gary Harris as well, and also from Denzel Valentine as well. So those are the cuts that we'll be listening to. But let's bring up Coach Izzo first, and he's talking about how the team has to. We talked about the different combos, and he's still trying to decide out on what's the best combinations to use.
You know, we're still in a stage where we're trying to figure out who's going to be in our playing group. So I'm trying to get Ghana in there, see how he's going to react. I'm trying to get Kearney in there, Brandon in there, to see how he's going to respond. I'm trying to look at who can be our backup point right now with Trice out. And, you know, it's hurting us a little bit. I mean, we played 10 guys, I think, 12 minutes or more, and that's almost impossible to do, but I just feel I still have to do it, and looking at the big picture. And so you know, in limited minutes, meaning Payne only played 16 and he gets 7 boards and 9 points, and Derek only played 20 or 21 and he gets 11 boards, but those guys never got the ball, and that was the game plan, to get it inside. I got too many guys jacking shots right now, and the guy that maybe should be getting more shots, Appling, is not. So I felt like Appling and Gary Harris, you know, played really well together. I felt other than that we were a little bit dysfunctional because of the number of guys. But we'll get that thing pared down, and I just want to make sure that it's where the players pare it down, not the coaches. And so the only way you can do that is let people play and either make their bet or make their bet. You know, I did not think we played with the same energy level. and that's disappointing. But I thought there were minutes in the first half, last 6, 8, 10 minutes of the first half. We played very, very well.
And yes, that's one thing about basketball. I know a lot of people don't understand this, but players will either play their way into the lineup and getting more playing time, or they'll play their way out of that lineup. That was cute that Coach Izzo said about, you play to make your bed or for more playing time. Well, it can go either way, and that's what happens. Either you'll play yourself and you'll be successful, or you'll play yourself right out of the lineup, and that's what usually happens in games. The coaches don't always make the decision. I know a lot of fans think the coaches make all the decisions. No, they don't. The players make the decision because by how they play. And I know some people love to get, they want their players and their favorite players to play, just play, even if they're not playing that well. They want them still to be out there playing, and that doesn't always happen. Well, let's hear one other cut from Coach Izzo, and he talks about how the players and the team has to play better.
Well, I think that's one of Denzel's issues. You know, he's always trying to make home runs, and he's forgetting about singles, you know. And, I mean, he had 5 assists, 1 turnover, and that was great, but I didn't think we ran our break and did the things we need to do. I think he's looking, you know, he's taking a couple of NBA threes. He hasn't shown that he can shoot that on a consistent level yet. So, I love Denzel, but I'm still not ready to say he's doing the things he's got to do on a consistent basis. Now, he did cut his turnovers down, which was a big thing from the previous games, but right now he's got to get better, a little better defensively and talking, and I think a lot better of pushing the ball and seeing who's open and trying to go for singles and not home runs. And yet he did have 5 assists and 1 turnover, which was an improvement.
Well, Gary Harris's play has been very impressive since the start of training camp. He's just fit in very well. He's learned to play defense, and I got to admit that it surprised me a little bit because Tom is a stickler for defense and improving on defense. And Gary Harris has came in and played very well. So let's hear what Coach Izzo has to say about Gary Harris.
Yeah, Gary's been as solid as anybody. You know, he's making free throws. He's if I had to pick a negative with Gary, and I will. He's not rebounding like I think he can. I mean, I think he could be a phenomenal rebounder. But he's not rebounding the ball real well. But he is running the court. He's hitting open shots. He's always ready to shoot. I think he's been very unselfish. He gets 10 shots, but I think he let everyone come to him. He's been every bit the billing so far. And he and Denzel and Keith at times played really well together, and that'll continue to improve. We just got to start defining some roles on who's a shooter and who's a passer and who's a defender. And it's hard to do that when you're not sure what anybody can do yet because we've had some of these goofy injuries. And we didn't even talk about Dawson. he plays at a certain speed and dominate stats. So if we can get him playing at a different speed, I think we could really make him a special player.
And I had a chance to talk with Gary Harris after the game, and he talked about how his defensive play has been. Gary, how relaxed are you? You seem like you're so comfortable when you're in a shooting zone.
I'm just out there just playing the game. I mean, it's easy to play with these guys. So, I mean, I'm out there just relaxed, just out there playing my game because, I mean, it's just, like I said, it's easy to play with this group of guys.
And you definitely playing good defense. Coach talked about your defense coming along. So how do you feel about your defense? How do you feel you're playing? And are you surprised that you're playing so well? Because, coaches is always hard on guys on defense, and it seems like you picked up everything he wants to do.
I mean, there's still areas of improvement. There's still times I haven't been beat when I shouldn't have been beat. Times we messed up switches. But, I mean, I think it's all part of the growing part of this and adjusting. I mean, just think I just still need areas I need to improve on.
Yes, and that's Gary Harris, and he's fit in very nicely, and he's doing everything defensively, and he's a good shooter. I mean, you can't ask for much more than that, a good shooter and a good defensive player. Well, also, we had a chance to talk with Derek Nix, and Nix had 11 rebounds yesterday, a very good rebounding game.
Oh, definitely. I'm gotta get some more putbacks. Those little garbage points, I need to start getting a lot more.
And overall, how do you see the team? Is it a good rebounding team, or is it just basically it seems like it's you and Payne?
We're pretty decent. You know, we got a lot to grow in that area because, you know, we've been ranked in 1 and 2 in the country when it comes to offensive rebounding. So we got to definitely pick that up.
And yes, then finally had a chance to talk with Denzel Valentine and about him being an unselfish player.
Looks forward to me, you know, being an unselfish player, you know, finding who's open. So, you know, when I come in, you know, I just try to just find who's open, you know, feel the game first, you know, see what type of angles I can create, and just try to make the correct passes.
And yes, so that's you heard from some of the players and some of the coaches from Coach Izzo, Coach Merchant, and some of the other players. So give us a call, talk sports with us right here on AM 870. We'll be giving away tickets to the Michigan State Boise State game coming up a little bit later on the show. Give us a call at 484-4783 or 884-4870. That's 884-4783 or 884-4870. Either one of the numbers work, so you just give us a call and you can win tickets to tomorrow night's game between Michigan State and Boise State. So give us a call right here on AM 870 WKAR. And then you got a call today and tomorrow for the game coming up on Friday with Oakland University. We'll have tickets to give away for that one. So a lot of games coming up soon, so we're going to be giving away tickets to the games coming up soon right here on AM 870 WKAR. So give us a call, talk sports with us, and we also want to spread the word around. Tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every afternoon right here on AM 870 WKAR. And we want you to listen to us each and every day, Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. So give us a call, talk sports with us, and hopefully you can, we'll try to have some more cuts for you tomorrow. We'll be working on that for you and find out more about that right here on AM 870. And so also want to thank John Lewandowski, Paulette Martis, and others in the Sports Information Director Department. They were very nice to me on Saturday, and I want to thank them for being very nice and kind to me right here on AM 870. Let's talk to Michael in Saginaw. Michael, how you doing?
How you doing there, Earl?
Okay.
How you think Ohio State feels right now?
Well, they got to be. I mean, they're having all the luck this year. They've been they've been good and lucky, and you know you got to have some luck every year. You know, there's always two or three games. No one just goes through dominating a season. There are always some games that they just skate by, and Ohio State is doing that this year. Michigan State did it the last couple of years. Now this year is Ohio State's year.
Do you think they feel kind of bad now because they will be playing for a BCS? If they would have been beat Michigan Saturday, they would have been playing for a national championship now?
Well, they probably would have, but that's the breaks. You know, those things happen. Teams go on probation and from time to time, and, hey, they happen to be on probation, so that's the breaks. So, you know, they're playing through it, though.
How long they on probation?
This is their last year.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how long Michigan gonna be on air?
I think this is just a 1 year thing too for them. I don't think that it's any longer than that because they didn't lose players and games and all that. Not like Ohio State and Penn State. Penn State's got another 3 years. They got 4 years altogether on probation. So Penn State is still going to be suffering from the ones that they have. So Penn State's got a long way to go.
Do you, speaking of this, this is the season for firing football coaches.
Yep.
Do you think, how long should a football coach have before they fired one and let him go and get a new coach? Because I know Tennessee just fired their coach, mm-hmm. and Kentucky fired their coach, and Western Michigan fired their coach, matter of fact.
Right.
Do you think that a lot of your universities now, if you're not coming off the blocks, you know, being in that upper division, they ain't going to get rid of you after 3 years. Do you think that's kind of fair?
No, it's not fair, but that is the way it is, unfortunately. Really, today you have about a three-year window. After 3 years, you better start getting your signs, you know, getting looks out and start looking to move somewhere, especially if you're losing. If you lose in those first 3 years or have two losing seasons, they're probably going to be looking to replace you. And that's always dangerous, but that's the nature of sports here. Today, everybody wants to win, and no one really has any patience. Teams just don't have any patience.
I understand. This is the last question, then I'll let you wrap up your show here. Mm-hmm. I notice in college basketball that, like, a lot of coaches put their athletes to play defense instead of teaching them how to be offensive players. You were saying that the Pistons don't know how to shoot. How many coaches that really teach their players how to make a – the inside game? It's like a lot of coaches are so afraid of losing their job now, they're just putting their athletes on the floor and letting them play defense. I take it off there. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay, thank you. That's the thing. Players, you know, you want your players to be, you know, if you've got really when you come to this level, you are probably already a good shooter, and you know how to get your shot off. A lot of times, guys in college, they were good shooters in college, but when they get to the pros, they're mediocre shooters. Why? Because they don't know how to get their shot off, and that happens to a lot of them. So, you know, if you're a good shooter in college and you're able to get your shot off in the pros, then you're going to have a nice career and be successful as a scorer. But a lot of times, good scorers just don't know how to get their shot off, and they just can't get their shot off at the next level, which is one of the problems. So you better learn to play very good defense for sure, and then of course you've got to make yourself a good shooter by a ton of practice, and then you have to learn how to get your shot off. A lot of guys become pretty good shooters in practice. Practice shooters, and they can only get their shot. They only get their shots or shoot well when there's no one on them. Guys will shoot extremely well when they don't have anybody. It's just like Aaron. Aaron's in the gym by himself. He gets his shot off all the time.
Oh, even then, that still doesn't go in. I mean, you got to get me a ladder, and then I might be able to put it in. Layups are tough. They're not easy to come by.
Yeah. Well, once you learn them, you're in pretty good shape. That's what most of the guys do. They've been shooting all their life, and now all of a sudden they're in there in the gym all the time. They're working on their shooting, and it surprises so many of them that they don't shoot as well as they did when they're in high school and when they're in college. And now they're at the biggest level, and they got to find out they've got to work even harder, which is a surprise to a lot of players.
Yeah, I mean, it is a surprise. And, you know, game time versus practice time is completely different. I mean, like I think as you pointed out, I mean, it's you know, you're going to have a defender on you that you've never seen before, or maybe if you have, you know, hasn't been that often.
He's bigger than you, more likely.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a completely different scenario, and you have to learn how to adjust. The best learn how to adjust on the fly and are able to you know, figure out the way to get a good shot off in that moment. So, you know, you can practice is good, but, you know, a game actually is practice at the same time. So,
yeah. Oh, do you have a winner for the tickets?
Yeah, we do. Okay. Sam from DeWitt is today's winner.
Okay, well, Sam, congratulations to you. You'll be going to the Michigan State Boise State game coming up tomorrow night. So, congratulations. And we should give the numbers out still, 884-4870. And the other number that we have is a chance for you to win tickets is 884-4783. That's 884-4783 or 884-4870. Either one, those work, and you can call and your chance to win tickets to Friday night's game between Michigan State and Oakland. Hey, I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you all for calling. Come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. We come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2:00 right here on WKAR. So come back, and I'll look forward to hearing from you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening, and I'll see you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.